Session number 12511.
Mr. Neville Wood, Reel 3.
The operation was called Character, and it was subdivided into three groups: otter, walrus, and mongoose. And we were in walrus.
Did you go in uniform?
Oh yeah.
And you dropped in the Karen Hills.
Karen Hills, yeah.
Which part?
Well, eastern part, really. Near Loy Cole.
How do you spell Loy Cole?
LORKAW.
What were the Karens like who met you? What kind of people were they?
Well, they were a mixed group, really. There was the Padongs were very bloodthirsty. There were the White Karens, the B2 Karens. B2 Karens? B2 Karens. Some of the Karens were not very offensive, really. But the Padongs were very offensive. They were headhunters originally, the Padongs. And the peculiar thing is that the women used to wear these brass rings around the necks, the long-necked women. You've seen pictures, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, well, they wore these rings around the necks. And they used to say if any of the women did anything wrong, they used to take the rings off the neck and they'd die. Because it used to stretch the necks.
What type of thing's wrong?
Well, if they went with anybody. Adultery or something like that.
What was the attitude of the Karens towards the Japanese?
Well, they didn't like them. Because they'd come into a village and they'd take what they wanted. They'd pinch the women, they'd pinch the cattle, chickens, rice. And they did things like, they'd pinch a cow in one village and drive it along, and then next time they wanted a meal, they used to cut a steak off its rump and drive it along to the next village. The beast would be howling in agony by then. After about 2 or 3 days of cutting steaks off, they'd kill it and eat it. And they used to do all sorts of horrible things, the Japs.
Were there many Japanese in the Loy Cole area?
Oh, yeah, quite a lot.
A battalion or more?
Oh, more. Throughout the division. In fact, in the July, they put a big operation up against us because we'd become a thorn in the side then. And they attacked us one morning about 6, and they brought a battery of 75mm mounting guns. And they opened fire. They'd been crafted because they hadn't come up the normal tracks, they'd come across the country. Because we had the normal tracks watched. And they opened fire on us. For about 10 days, a battle royal waged. We called all our reinforcements in from various areas and went against them. It lasted about 10 days of fight, and during the time the colonel said, "Will you take a party down to Myeongsong, to the Japanese headquarters?"
To where?
Myeongsong, to the Japanese headquarters, and go and see what you can do with it. So two of us went down there with a party of Karens. We got down there, and there were just a few Japanese down there, and a few wounded. They were holding it as a hospital depot, really. So we just went through and just did what damage we could, and then came away.
This was in July, you said.
Yeah. Yeah, they tried a few times to get rid of us. Because we've become such a nuisance, and It's hard to get rid of us.
What kind of operations were the Karenni rebels conducting against the Japanese?
Guerrilla type operations. Ambushes.
Ambushing their units?
Well, there's a main road run down the side of the territory, and the Japs used to move down at night. They wouldn't move during the day because of the RAF. But we used to go down there, and we used to mine the road. We used to get a drop of explosives in about a mile or two from the main road, and we'd move in, and we'd mine the road. There was a ton of explosives, and then when the Japanese columns came down, we used to let it go. And then we'd run up and open fire with everything we'd got for about 2 minutes and run away. Because after 2 minutes it was no longer a surprise. And they were trained troops and we weren't.
Did you usually go out on the operations?
What?
Did you usually go out on the operations yourself?
Yeah. They're quite good, really.
But you were operating your wireless set as well?
What?
You were operating
I wouldn't take it with me.
But whilst you were in Burma, you were operating the wireless set. Was it the same type of wireless set?
Well, they were in rainproof containers then. But basically, it was the same set. Yeah.
Was it easy to operate a wireless set in Burma?
Very easy, just put a stone in your area and throw it up, get about 50 feet of aerial up and open up.
Over a branch?
Yeah.
What did you do for power?
Batteries.
Were they rechargeable?
Yeah.
How did you recharge them?
Recharging unit. Get a battery, petrol-driven charger dropped in. And used to charge them up about six at a time.
Did that work all right?
Yeah. It worked until the Japanese caught it. Because, funny enough, Don Gibb was with me at the time, and we were in this... we lived in a house we'd built in the southeast part of the area. And we'd been there about... We were daft, really. We'd been there too long. And we'd raided the road about three or four times. And one morning, about 4:30, the Japs came up. The first thing we knew was this Japanese rifle fire. And we used to have a bit of a joke, really. We used to say, oh, it's only bamboo. Because bamboo, you know, if you put bamboo in fire, it bangs off, you know. When the air inside the bamboo goes. And these went off, and I said, oh, it's only bamboo. And Don Gibb said, bloody well, is it Japs? So a bit of a scutter. We had a hole dug for this charging unit. We dropped it in and covered it over with branches and that to hide it. But the Japs found it and threw it down the side of the cliff. But I went, the colonel said to me, will you take Lockett? So I said, right. So Lockett was a captain. And he was a member of... he dropped him with a sergeant in late July 1944. And their object of their operation was to get near British camps, in, you know, Japanese camps. And then, if they could, smuggle arms in. Because it was thought that if the war went the wrong way, the Japs would kill all the prisoners. And the idea was to smuggle as many arms in the camps, so they couldn't do that. But Lockett had been wounded badly in the Arakan area. He got the MC for that. And unfortunately, they'd given him morphia to alleviate the pain. And he got an addiction to it. And have you ever seen those little morphia armfuls?
No.
Well, in all the medical chests we used to get dropped in, we used to have about a dozen morphia armfuls, which contained one shot. And you unscrewed the top and then put the needle in and pressed it in. It was designed to give alleviation for wounds. And all our contents had been vanishing because we used to open the medical chests. There was nothing in them. And I went, I walked by Lockett's bedroll one morning with foot coated blanket. There were about three of these used at the side of his bed. I went and told the colonel, and the colonel said, that explains it, because some days he'd be really chatty and lively. Other days he'd be really down, you know, and morose. So we did evacuate him by L5. But the colonel said to me, will you take Lockett? So I took Lockett. And about four or five Indians we'd captured. They were a Japanese independent force, GIFs. I took these, and away we went. Oh, Lockett was in a shocking state, because he got no supplies of morphine then. He kept falling over, and I kept kicking him up. We went up over the hills, and it was not a nice journey.
Was he raving?
He was in a pretty bad state. And he just had a blanket round his lower part and a green jungle vest on. And he kept lying like this at the side of the track.
With his hands together?
Yeah. And his knees up in the fetal position. And I was kicking him. I got him back to this village, and then we got a plane in the little L5. And it took him back to India then, subsequently. He was demobbed and...
So he'd been poisoning himself, really? He'd been poisoning himself, really?
Well, it's a bit like heroin, really. You know, if you go on morphine, you've not much chance.
Can you tell me more about these GIFs that you captured? The GIFs, the Indians?
Well, these were Indians who had been captured at places like Singapore. They'd been originally in the Indian Army. And the Japanese had told them they didn't fight for them, they'd bump them off. And they gave them pretty horrid treatment, so the Mormons volunteered en masse to join the Japanese Army. But when we captured them, of course, they were... They knew very well the war would nearly be over, so they came onto our side, really.
What was their attitude?
Very subservient, really.
Were they Sikhs or some other kind of Indians?
Oh, no, they're other kind of Indians. In fact, I cut up one as my cook. The British cook, Sab. Well, he was a tall laddie. He came from North India. And I employed him as my cook for a time and got him back to India.
How fit did you keep in Burma? Did you stay healthy yourself?
It's funny, really, because before I went into Burma, they brought round some little tiny, a bit like, sugar tablets. What do you call them?
Quinine?
No, sugar. What people put in the...
Saccharin,
a bit like saccharin. And they gave us a little file of these. And they were salt tablets. And they said, take these every day. So I religiously took them every day. And it's funny. A lot of the people didn't take salt regularly. And they got a scratch on the leg as it turns ulcerous. Mine didn't. I kept fairly free.
Were they called jungle sores?
Pardon?
Were they called
jungle sores? Yeah, yeah. Pretty bad, really. I had a friend who had them, and he could dig them out like that with a spoon.
The pus?
Yeah. They're pretty nasty.
So you didn't get any diseases yourself?
Well, I did get malaria, ultimately. I got malaria.
Did you have any prophylactic? Any drug that you took against it?
Yeah, we could take mepocrine. We got mepocrine tablets. And I took these mepocrine religiously again. Until I got back home to England, I stopped taking them. Then the malaria came out. It was only a suppressive drug. Didn't cure it at all.
How did you cope with the climate there?
Fairly good. A bit like Scotland, really, because it was up in the Karen Hills. You're fairly high up in the hills, and it was miles of pine forests. It was very similar to Scotland. So it was very, very easy to live there. The monsoon was a bit nasty, of course.
Were you living in the Karenni villages all the time?
In some of them, yeah. Oh, we used to live just outside. Yeah.
What were the Karenni villages like?
Well, they're all mountain villages. And all the houses were on piles. And there was a stockade around the village. So there wasn't really much room for large bodies of people. But we used to stay in them. They're always terribly smoky. Because they have a couple of fires on clay banks in the hut. And if you got any green wood, you'd smoke like mad. They're terrible, really, to live in.
Were you moving about very much? Did you travel around the great
day? Oh, yeah, we used to move around, but you had to use Shank's pony all the time.
So you were moving around for security reasons?
Yeah. But, as I say, you use Shank's pony, it was a bit...
Was it just as easy to get supply drops?
It wasn't too bad.
As in France?
It wasn't too bad. The weather was against you in some cases because the weather had come down and you couldn't get a plane in.
The rain, you mean?
Yeah. But at the village near Hoya, we'd been operating from there for a bit.
Where?
Hoya, H-O-Y-A. And we had a drop laid on and this drop didn't come. About a couple of days later, we found out the plane had come there. And what had happened, that there was hills and hills and hills. And the pilot had been there before, so he came down in the hills. And he found a gap in the rain clouds. And he thought he'd drop. So he started to make his run in and drop. And he suddenly saw a hill sticking in front of him. So he pulled his joystick up to climb over the hill. And he couldn't do it, and his tail unit ripped off in the trees. And the plane crashed. It had 28,000 in Indian rupees on board. And they burnt up. And the colonel said, go down there and collect what you can. So I went down there and the villagers were a bit naughty. But I told them if they didn't give up what they got from the plane, I'd burn the village down. So they soon coughed up them, but the bags of 1,000 rupees, sacking bags, and what had happened, all the sacking had burnt off and the silver had melted in lumps. And there were like big lumps of silver left with bits of coin sticking out. That was the end of the 28,000.
But there was nothing stopping them just giving you part of what they'd collected?
Well, there wasn't really, but they were too frightened by then.
Would you have burnt the village down?
I think so, yeah. Because the funny thing is, as war goes on, you get more into it. You do things that you'd never ever contemplate doing in a civilian environment. You won't do things like that.
You just became ruthless.
You just become ruthless, yeah.
Why do you think it happens like that?
I think it's just a way of life. And then the war ended. We used to get lots of weary willies wandering around.
How do you mean, weary willies?
Well, the Japs used to send wounded people back to the hospitals. They send them back through the hills and they put, say, half a dozen men with a corporal and one rifle. And we used to call these Weary Willies because the natives would say there's a party of X number, and we'd go along there and we'd just kill them. And of course, the Japs only gave them a rifle and about 10 rounds of ammo. So by the time they exhausted their ammo, they were fairly easy meat.
How many occasions would this happen, do you think?
Oh, a dozen of them, really. Nearly every day. Because the Japs didn't want them up on the main fronts. They'd be a liability. So if they could walk, they'd send them back and let them get repaired back at base and send them out again.
Which did you prefer, working in Burma or working in France?
They're two completely different types of operation. In France, you can move around fairly easy, either on bicycle. We used bicycles a lot. Because if you heard a vehicle coming, you knew very well it would need always be a German vehicle, so you could just throw your bicycle over the hedge and jump in after it. We couldn't do that in Burma because there were no hedges and there were no bicycles. And of course the monsoon was against you really in Burma. Because it's pretty dreadful, the monsoon. I used to wear one of these big native hats.
Straw hat?
Yeah.
Like a Chinese hat?
Yeah. To stop the rain. And I used to take my trousers off and wear a longi, a Burmese skirt, because the rain was so heavy. You could just pull the skirt up and tuck it in your waistband. And, you know, your boots and socks off and walk along in bare feet. It was pretty grim, the monsoon.
Did you get any infestations of your feet with using your bare feet?
Not really, no.
Sounds as though you preferred France to Burma, then.
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. Yeah.
How did your time in Burma finish? Did you get news of the air bombs?
Yeah. Yes, I was listening to the radio one day and it said that a bomb had been dropped on Hiroshima. Was it Hiroshima?
Yes.
On Hiroshima. And then as the days went on, we knew that the Japs had packed in. And that was about the time that the British Army had cut the Japanese Army in two in Burma. Because they'd landed at Rangoon and they'd come up the road heading towards Tungu. They come down from Pimana and they're going down toward Tunga and they cut the Jap army in two. And they're just slaughtering them in thousands because the Japs tried to break out and they just opened up and they killed thousands of them. They're down near the Pegu Yomas.
So what happened to you personally once you got the news of Hiroshima?
Well, after about a week, the colonel said, I don't think there's any point in you hanging about around here now. You better go back. So I got in a boat and went up. We were on a tributary of the Salween, the Baluchong we were on. I got in a boat and went up to Mitkinar. And then I went down to Tungu and Rangoon, then flew up to India and then back to Ceylon.
Did you have any adventures on your journey out?
Not really, no. After we'd been in Ceylon about a fortnight, 3 weeks, the colonel sent for me and said, we want you to go into Dutch East Indies. So I said, what for? He said, to find out what the native reaction is to the Dutch going back, which we knew by then from various reports we'd had that it wasn't very good. So I said, well, I'll go. So I was lined up to go in with a team into Dutch East Indies.
Into where?
Dutch East Indies. Anyway, after about 2 or 3 days, I thought, well, bugger it, you know, I've come through the war all right so far, I'm not going there and getting bumped off. So I went to see the colonel, and I thought, I want to pull out of that. So he said, all right, I don't blame you. So we discussed where I could go to from there, and he came up with the Royal West African Frontier Force.
Just coming back to Burma, did the Japanese give in as soon as Hiroshima occurred?
No. No. The RAF saturated Burma with pieces of paper, with Jap on one side, English on the other. But there were lots of the Japanese wandering around who didn't know the war was over. In fact, I went out one day on my horse and rode about 20 miles. And went down a valley and suddenly it was realised there was a Japanese artillery unit there. I was being a bit worried. Anyway, they knew the war was over. So I went to see the Japanese officer. I said, we'll come tomorrow and take your surrender. He said, well, I want a senior British officer to do it. So I said, right, I'll bring the colonel. So I went back and I told the colonel they were ready to give it. There were about 400 of them. So we were off the next day, but the Japs had pulled up the skirts, they'd gone off into Thailand. So I said, they couldn't be doing it, so let some other person look after them, we'll not bother. But lots of Japs wandering around, they didn't know what was over.
Were they dangerous?
Well, yeah, because they'd attack you. Well, they were hard because when we moved from into Loy Kaur, we had a Japanese sergeant major we captured, and he had a grenade wound in the back of his head. It was a bad one. And he marched with us to Loy Kaur. He was hard. With the Japanese army about 12 years. He'd been in Shanghai, goodness knows where.
When was that you had him?
Oh, at the end of the war.